Hey, this is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I'm back with Christmas Abbott. On this show, we talk about creating passion and purpose. We talk about constructing and delivering a speech or a talk. And we talk about why taking action despite not feeling confident or feeling uncomfortable is a key in success and finding happiness in life. Enjoy the show. Hey, this is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. I am back with Christmas Abbott. Christmas, after much technical difficulty, we are here. Thank you so much for making some time for me.
Anytime. Thank you so much, Mike.
Appreciate Absolutely. So I want to start out here. Recently, we got a chance to hang out in Houston to be a part of a kind of WAG get together in which we did some service work for people affected by the hurricane. So I'm wondering, why were you interested in that, and what role does that kind of thing play in your life?
You know, we've just been hit by so many natural disasters and a series of unfortunate events, whether it's natural disaster or our society just kind of having a hard time right now. And my mother lives in Texas. There was just so much devastation, not just in Texas, but a lot of the southern countries and states. So I just felt obligated that I'm a capable, willing body. I have the platform to rally some help. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to go get in the mix of it and do something substantial that was bigger than me.
I want to run this by you. This is a breakthrough that I had this past weekend, kind of a big mental shift, and it's related to exactly what we're talking about, which is service. So I realized that for my entire life, I've been focused on how, like, what others can do for me and what others can do to make my life better. Every one of my relationships, I look at it in large part in terms of how can this person benefit my life? And I also look at myself, like, what can I do to change myself, better myself? What do I need to achieve to live the best and happiest life? The breakthrough that I had was that by focusing, simply shifting the focus onto others and being, living from a place of what can I do to make other people's lives better, immediately makes you happier and more fulfilled. So what do you think about that?
I think that, one, I'm surprised to hear that you've had this mental shift just this recently, because I think that your work is a service to many, many people. And obviously, you know, your wife, Adi, has the same drive, and I'm often inspired by you too.
Thank you.
Relationship. And I think that as soon as people start realizing that it's you yourself, even though it's your world, that you aren't actually the center of the universe.
Right.
And, you know, when we start doing things that are bigger than ourselves, we start filling that void in our heart that's missing with something. And I believe that that's service. And, you know, we always want to find happiness, but we're always finding happiness in the wrong places. And people that have everything they could ever imagine, an amazing partner, an awesome job, the perfect house, all of their dreams are coming true, no financial issues, they can still find themselves in a void. Mm-hmm. And I believe that void is filled by community service, volunteering, and being involved with something that is beyond the scope of just you. And when we realize that we're just a flash at best in this world and universe in this lifetime, and we get to contribute a positive footprint directly in the world, I think that's really healing in our heart. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure exactly what it is. Maybe it's that whole concept of, you know, that comfort zone. And as soon as you get outside of that, that's right. Where the magic is. I think the same for service. As soon as you start getting outside of your comfort zone in your community where you feel comfortable and you know everybody, and you start going into wreckage of hurricanes and tornadoes, or the that hospital or the local soup kitchen, you start seeing how blessed you are, and you start seeing how much you need to actually be active in this world to make a better difference.
Right. I think like there's so much talk these days about living a life of purpose and of meaning. And I think that I'm really not one that believes in like we're put on this planet for a purpose. I think we have an opportunity to create that purpose. And by focusing on serving others, whether it be for profit or not, right? Focusing on serving others creates this sense of purpose and meaning in your life.
I agree with you 100%. So, you know, looking back at my career, I had to serve myself before I could serve anybody else. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you that it was also serving everybody that either followed me or was inspired by me, getting them, sharing my information, sharing my experience. Holy cow. People don't think that that's a service, but you have this experience, and I wanted to share it because I didn't want to have any secrets that held me down in the sense of holding me down in the concept of like an emotional cancer. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't want to feel that I had this dirty secret and one day it was going to come out to haunt me. And I think that I needed to share that with other people, and it ended up opening doors for me to serve them in a way that I never knew that I could. Mm-hmm. And through that, I, you know, started with my fitness programs, boot camps, and et cetera. But really, it's that emotional connection, that those intangible things that cannot be manufactured or produced or created other than through human connection.
Mm-hmm. In general, you're someone that I look at and think, fuck, I wish I had that level of confidence. And so you're just out there, you're taking enormous risk, you're really putting yourself out there, and you create opportunities for yourself rather than just sitting back and waiting for it to happen to you. And I actually posted something similar about Adi recently, where she doesn't wait until it's comfortable to take action. So I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on like how much of what you do is based on you being confident, and how much is based on you just taking action because you know that's what's going to move you forward?
Oh man, there's been so many projects, and I call companies projects, that I've started and dove headfirst into just because I loved it. Passion is a huge role there. And, you know, passion can give you a false confidence. And, mm-hmm. But at the same time, I just always wanted to do the things that I believed in. And people would tell me all the time, they're like, oh, Christmas, don't work out too much, you're going to look like a man. Or, you know, you can do it a little bit, but not all the way. Or you'll never be an athlete. You'll never be an HQ coach. You'll never be a gym owner. And I take that fuel and I'm like, wait a minute, that's not my dream. That's what you are projecting your dream onto me. And so it's a combination of both, where I'm not always confident with when I enter into a venture. I am often scared and afraid of failure, but I have come through experience to know that failure is only failure if I quit. And there is no way in hell that I will ever quit anything that I believe in. So I think that it's a combination of both, but I think that you also have to be willing to be uncomfortable, take risks, and invest in yourself. And unfortunately, most people don't do that. Most people will not invest in themselves. They believe that somebody else can do it better than them. Mm-hmm. And who's to say that? Maybe, you know, you can take advice, take it or leave it, but if it's your dream, your passion, your plan, your purpose, why aren't you spearheading that and making sure that everything is right the way that you see it and making your dream come into a reality? So I think that it's a combination of both, and you have to be a little bit willing to, have a little emotional scars and fail hard occasionally.
Yeah, I'm learning more and more that it's really simple. Like there are people that take action and those that don't. And I've operated oftentimes in this place of I will take action as long as I'm in a state, as long as I feel confident, right, that I'll succeed. And over the years, I've learned to take bigger and bigger risks because it doesn't, you don't have to be confident to succeed at something. All you have to do is start, because that's where you're going to learn. That's where you're going to get better. And if you wait until you're confident to do something, or if you wait until it's comfortable to do it, then you literally may never do anything.
I agree 100%. There is nothing that I have gone into with complete confidence. And, you know, a beginner is a novice. You know, you have no idea what's going on. You have to learn it, repeat it, and consistently practice it to get well at it, to build that confidence, right? If you're going in saying this is going to be perfect day one, you have an absurd amount of blind confidence. And hello, give some to me, okay? Yeah. Like, I don't know where that comes from, but... you know, you just have to make sure that you don't allow your insecurities or your timidness or your fear of failure to hold you back. Mm-hmm. Those things should be actually kind of like a little turbo boost to make you want to do it. And I've told people, like everything in my life that has been significant has terrified me before I tried it.
Right.
And I tried it and I was like, okay, I don't know what this means. I don't know where this is going to lead, but I'm going to go forward with it. And that was trying CrossFit. That was trying out for CrossFit HQ head trainer. That was also NASCAR. That was also my first weightlifting competition. That was my first CrossFit competition. So everything that has been of significance in my life, I was convinced that I was never going to be able to do it, had the nerve to try it, and then was willing to go forward with it no matter, even not knowing the results, right? Not knowing the end result. And they've all turned out pretty okay for me.
Hell yeah. What's your view on finding purpose in life? Is it found or created?
Oh man, I think that you have to create it. And the way that you create it is by exploration, right? Mm-hmm. You don't sit in your house and go, man, I need a new hobby. I need a new passion. I need a new purpose in life. I'm going to sit here and think about that. Get off your freaking butt and go try something. If it interests you at all, or make a random list and, you know, 30 days, 30 challenges, whatever it may be, but you have to go and have the experience, because if you don't have the experience, then you are convincing yourself of something that you may or may not love without ever touching it. So I think that people need to get out and try new things regularly to figure out whether or not they're interested in it. And if there's an interest there, it could be a new passion. I remember the first time I ran a mile when I decided to quit smoking and start working out. I ran a mile. I almost died. I said, fuck fitness. That is the worst thing that anybody could ever do to themselves. And you know, over curiosity, you know, over a couple months, my curiosity got the better of me. And luckily, I had some people push me in that direction. And I tried something different. I tried the elliptical. And it was a very different experience. But the point is that I thought I knew what fitness was, and I had no idea until I started to explore it.
No shit, that 30 challenges in 30 days, you should create that for the, what's your book, The Badass Life or The Badass Body Life?
The second one. Life. Yeah.
Badass Life. That's fucking cool.
Thanks.
I like that. I really love this notion of creating passion versus finding it. And looking at it from the lens of basically we love what we're good at, right? So anything, you're not necessarily going to find something you're passionate about right away, but by trying different things, you'll find something that you're interested in. And then as you master that thing, you become more and more passionate about it. It takes away a lot of the, I don't know, fear and confusion around like quote unquote finding your passion, because in the beginning you suck at everything. You have to create that passion. I really, really like that.
Thanks. Yeah, I agree 100%. There's, I don't know anybody that's ever been like, you know, I was just sitting there and somebody brought this thing to me and I just fell in love with it right away and it became my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still waiting to hear that story from somebody, that testimony.
Yeah.
Not happening.
So I saw you last year at the Strong Summit. And honestly, I was incredibly surprised by how well you spoke. And I had basically like misjudged you. I knew like you were an athlete, you were in NASCAR, and I was just really surprised by how well you spoke. I'd love to learn a little bit about your process for creating and crafting a message and then delivering that. I think this is going to be really interesting for obviously anyone that coaches or teaches or presents, but really for anyone listening, because learning to organize your thoughts and craft a message can make you a more effective person in general. Because at the end of the day, we're all salesmen, right? We're all trying to sell our beliefs and ideas to anyone that we're in a relationship with, whether you're, you know, selling a product or you just want to convince someone to go to the movie you want to go to. It's a useful thing to know how to craft a message. So how do you begin organizing a speech or a talk?
Well, it depends on what the talk is usually, or the platform, mm-hmm. and the audience. So I always want to speak to the audience something compelling. I like to invoke feeling and emotion and connection. And I think that is such a powerful motivation. So depending on who I'm speaking to and what the subject is, I will kind of pull from my own experiences. I think that is way more powerful than just, you know, talking about other stories. For me, it allows me to connect with the audience and the speech way more intimately. So from there, I figure out what I want my core messaging to be, you know, whatever my mantra for that speech is. And then I work around that mantra, building from basically the inside out. Mm-hmm. The mantra, and I think at Strong, was that the branding, or was that?
I think so. Yeah.
So, you know, depending on what it is, I have that mantra and then I build from there. So I'll just kind of build the outline. I call it my skeleton, mm-hmm. and it'll be one bullet point sentence for each paragraph that I want to deliver. I rehearse it, but ultimately I want two things. I want to invoke a feeling to create a connection, mm-hmm. and then two, deliver something that they're going to remember. So at that time I came out and I was wearing a bathrobe, right? And I wanted you guys to have this image of me.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I took the bathrobe off and I had a completely different image of me, showing you guys how to shift, you know, how we can.
You had clothes on under the bathrobe. Let's make that known.
Oh my God. Yes. That's yeah. That would have completely shifted you guys' image.
Yes.
But I was talking about branding, imaging, and what you put out there is what people perceive of you. And for me, I wanted people to be able to take home a tangible, how they felt about that speech, but also something imagery-wise or experience-wise that they could go home and say, look, this is what I can kind of either repeat or demonstrate.
Right.
But ultimately, if I have not had some sort of personal experience with it, I don't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. I don't have that authority. And so I always try and pull from my own experiences in the best positive way, even when it's a little exposing for like my feelings and life experiences.
Totally. I mean, that's what helps people really connect to it more than anything, is that that emotional, like that authenticity. And you did a phenomenal job of delivering that to like bring your points to life.
Thank you.
So go in a little more into how you prepare. So you talked about the bullet points, right? So I've made the mistake in the past of writing out the entire talk and just reading it over and over, and then like creating cue cards. So I need like, you know, fewer and fewer reminders. But what that does is it creates the necessity for me to memorize what I wrote, which kills any possibility of like spontaneity and interaction with the group, right? So how do you, elaborate a little further on what do you do after those bullet points and how do you practice from there?
So once I have my my core outline, I will write it out. I need to thought process, and you should see some of my notes with some of my speech writing. It's mm-hmm. really fun. Because what happens during this time is I may expand on some other ideas that I can use in other speeches. So I actually have a speech tab with a whole bunch of information saved. Mm-hmm. And I try not to go verbatim with what I write. Ultimately, what that does is that it just allows me to kind of remember that experience and be able to really capture the feeling and hit home some really strong points. So I write it out, but then I condense it and I'll make each bullet point, each subject or each point that I want to drive home, I'll kind of go through that idea in my head, write it out, and then condense it, and then go back and practice it. I try not to practice it too much. I just try and remember that skeleton. Mm-hmm. But the points that I want to drive home, I will remember where and when I want to deliver those, and really, really make sure that that is on schedule.
Right.
So I try not to, too polished. I don't go verbatim. I practice a little bit just so I can have that confidence. But I've also been doing public speaking for a couple of years now. And I was very fortunate to be able to work for CrossFit HQ, where every weekend I was delivering a speech.
Right.
And practice makes a good experience. So if you're new to public speaking, I would not necessarily suggest this, because you can really easily lose your train of thought and go completely off track. So practice this in front of your friends, in front of the mirror, in the shower, in front of a group of strangers that you don't know. Make eye contact. So if you do make eye contact, you don't get derailed in your actual speech. Mm-hmm. I like to make eye contact. I like to walk off the stage and get in the mix of the crowd, which is a little bit more of an advanced skill, because it can throw you off of your speech.
Right.
And from there, I really try and make sure that when I go into it, I am like jazz. I'm in that moment. I remember that experience, and I try and deliver that as close to possible when I go on stage.
I love it. One really helpful thing that a lot of professionals teach, and that I didn't get taught until recently, is to start with the end in mind. And this is something that you said in the beginning, right? You get really clear about who your audience is, and then get really clear about what you want the end result to be. Like, what do you want them to feel or understand? What kind of, if it's a mental shift you want to make, or if it's a set of actions that you want them to take, such as practicing something or a certain exercise, getting really clear about what the end result is. And then you kind of reverse engineer it so that everything leads to that final call to action. And then from there, it gets really easy to know what you should and shouldn't include, because does this contribute to that final call to action or not? If it doesn't, then it doesn't, it's not included.
I agree 100%. And that's the same kind of concept of delivering that mantra. I usually will find that one sentence that I want to just wow them with, mm-hmm. or have them take home. And then it's usually the last sentence.
Right. It's like the Simon Sinek. It's not, what does he say? They don't care about what you do. They care why you do it.
Yeah.
He says it over and over and over and over, so that when people ask, what was that talk about? You can literally repeat the mantra, as you're calling it.
Yes.
Do you get nervous before your biggest talks? And if so, what's that experience like in your mind and your body?
I get nervous, but I also get really excited. Mm-hmm. It still blows my mind that people want me to talk and they're listening to what I have to say. And I think that remembering that is important, or at least keeping that humility is important. And I get nervous, but what calms me down, I review my notes. I remember what I'm doing there, why I'm there, what the forum is for. And, I always want to deliver the best possible. So I try not to beat myself up too much, because, you know, you can put that crazy pressure on yourself, and it can be deconstructive, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, pressure is a privilege, and some people shine and some people don't. So if you don't naturally shine in pressure, be cautious of putting too much on yourself. But if, you know, even I thrive in pressure, but I try not to put too much on myself before a speech, because I don't want to get too far in my head. And that is a scary place to go. So I tend to just take a quiet few minutes, review my notes, do a couple of breathing exercises to calm myself down. And I go in there and I just, you know, accept it for what it is and not worry about if I mess up, if I lose my little train of thought for a minute, you know, life will still go on if you mess up. Mm-hmm. But hopefully I remember my mantra and I deliver that last impacting sentence the way that I wanted to.
You just said something really cool that I've never heard. Pressure is a privilege. Can you expand on that?
Oh man, there's a UFC fighter. His name is eluding me right now, but what he says all the time is pressure is a privilege. And if you think about that, if you're having pressure to perform with work, with family, that means that you have those responsibilities. You have that desire to perform well. You have that extension of yourself, and you are doing something that is of significance, whatever spectrum that may be. And, you know, pressure can be daunting, but I see it as a privilege. And as soon as I have pressure on myself, or I put pressure on myself for my work or my companies, or, you know, doing something for myself or my fans, or delivering or performing in my workouts, then I know that one, I give a shit, mm-hmm. which is awesome. You should try that sometime.
Yeah.
And then I want to do well, not just give a shit, but I want to do well and exceed my own expectations.
That's so cool. I heard a really interesting tip as well, talking about getting nervous before either speaking engagement or really anything. If it's some kind of performance, just reframing the event as exciting can completely flip your kind of mindset, right? It takes it from one of fear to one of power.
100%. And, you know, we've all heard the explanation of fear is just misplaced excitement. And as soon as I heard that one day, I was like, holy cow, you're right. Still don't like heights. So I'm mis-excited about heights. But I do embrace it. You know, I do things to try and conquer that. And I try to see it as, okay, I'm just really excited about this, and I'm going to allow myself to be excited about it. So funny story is that I did indoor skydiving, and the guy took me all the way to the top, and we were floating for a second, and then we plummeted down, and I was freaking out. I knew that I was going to be scared. I don't know. There's just something wrong with me with being irrationally scared about heights. Mm-hmm. And I knew going in there that I was going to be scared, and I was. But as I was going through this process, I was like, okay, Christmas, you can either allow this fear to sabotage your experience and be scared the whole time, or you can turn this fear into excitement and have an amazing time. And I decided to turn the fear into excitement, and I was scared for the first, you know, a little bit of it, but it shifted to excitement. And you have to be aware of that, and you have to activate that. It just doesn't happen naturally. So I think awareness is a huge thing with being able to control whether it's fear or excitement.
So cool. And actually, I've not heard that little anecdote, fear is misplaced excitement. That's another one.
Man, you're full of them. All kinds of knowledge.
Yeah, today. You're full of them today. I'm going to throw you a curveball. What's the biggest breakthrough, or just a big breakthrough mentally, that you've made in the past year?
Oh man. Okay. So, okay. So this is something that we probably talked about on the bus. Well, I talked to a D about this, mm-hmm. so I don't think that you were in this conversation. Sorry, Mike. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I've had a pretty rough year so far, but it's also been equally amazing. And that's okay to admit. And coming out of the Big Brother house, I had like a lot of clarity on a couple of things. So going into the Big Brother house, I was like 100% my brand, which I love. I love my job so much that I eat, sleep, dream it 24/7. But I realized going into the Big Brother house that I was my brand 24/7 versus nurturing my brand and allowing a little piece of Christmas to be just Christmas, right? And that's not saying that I'm different than what I put out there, but I'm saying that like I don't have to be on all the time. Mm-hmm. And coming out of the house, I was like, holy crap, I want to be more me, meaning that I want to get back to the little girl that was so excited about life that she decided to quit smoking and start working out in the middle of a war zone. And just to try something new because she wanted something better for herself and find that fire that drove myself to wanting more for my life and exploring what that meant. And so I'm kind of coming full circle where I'm okay. Like I love my brand and I want to do things for that to nourish it and grow it. But I also want to nourish and grow the little girl that was inspired to create the brand.
Right.
And so that for me is really cool. And it doesn't have to all be fitness related. I decided I'm looking into getting my pilot license. I'm looking into some activities that don't require fitness, which is shocking.
Love it.
But just, you know, exploring things that nurture the soul a lot more. So I've been journaling. I've been doing Polaroid photos, a little bit of pilot lessons. And, you know, that to me was really amazing, where before I wouldn't have carved out that time because it didn't enhance the brand.
Yes. Totally understand that. I think we may have talked a little bit about this, where we're taught to basically, we're taught that the harder you work, the better human being you are. Right. And like the harder you work, the better life you're going to have. And that we have to earn free time and we have to earn play and all of this kind of stuff. But as I get older, I'm figuring out more and more that one, life is absolutely not about work, right? And so if you're working just for work's sake, then that's just, you know, living life on a rat wheel. And furthermore, we don't have to earn free time, right? I think putting free time and play and like self-nourishment, those are like some of the most important things in life. And those are the times that we get to connect with people that we love and really, really be present. But also I think it makes us so, so much more productive when we allow ourselves to rejuvenate. I heard this really cool analogy by some like Zen, like yogi person that we're, especially in Western society, we're so focused on the exhale that we forget to ever inhale. And if we don't inhale and we don't make time for rejuvenation, then we're always going to be operating in a state of like 80% or less, right? We need that rejuvenation to be as powerful and be as productive as possible.
Yeah, we can totally pull an example out of fitness from this. Okay, so I was the same way. I was like, work 24/7. If it didn't benefit my work, then I wasn't interested because my work is my life and I love my life. And it's just this, you know, it is a vicious cycle, but it's my, you know, the cycle that I was in, but it was also crazy positive. But it was also so much that it became a negative, right? Mm-hmm. Too much of anything, even if it's good, can result in bad. And I decided when I came home, I was like, look, guys, I'm here, but I'm not working. I need a time out. And I became so much more creative, so much more in tune with myself and what I wanted and the vision that I saw, that when I did show up to work at the agency, they were like, holy crap, Christmas. Go get some more of what you just got. Mm-hmm. Because you're on fire right now. It's clear, concise. It's not, I'm not worried about all the little crazy details. I'm chasing myself in a round in a circle. I am actually being able to balance both of them. And when you step away from something and you come back, you're refreshed, right? Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing as training. If we train every single day, 7 days a week, and say our training is 2 hours, right? On a light day.
Right.
And we never take that day off, then we're starting to train in a deficit consistently, and we're poisoning our bodies essentially. Mm-hmm. Same concept with working 24/7 or constantly running around in the hamster wheel. If you allow yourself, not even allow yourself, if you force yourself, just do it, man. Actually take a real weekend off and don't run around ragged. Like, that's not taking a weekend off. Mm-hmm. Find something that you enjoy that's going to kind of revitalize you a little bit. And then when you go back to work on Monday, or maybe you take a week off, you'll find that you're actually wanting to be there and you have clear ideas and you're not searching for something that isn't there because you just pushed yourself into the ground face first.
Right. And one mistake I've made kind of on that front is when I have free time, I always want to be like learning something. But nowadays we have no shortage of information, right? There's more free, high quality education and information available all over the place than ever before. So we have no shortage of that. What we do have a shortage of is spending time like processing and digesting that information and letting it, letting ourselves be creative with that. So
I love
during,
it.
Go ahead.
You got in a minute. I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm so excited about this. I had an experience the other day and I was like, I'm going to sit here and actually think about how I feel about this.
Mm-hmm.
Just sit down. And I took maybe, I think it was about 7 minutes or so. And I just sat there and I thought, what is it that I think about this? How do I feel about this? And it was a nice moment because before you just accept the information, file it and go forward.
Yep.
And you can say that you feel a way about it, but do you really feel that way? Or are you just kind of having a knee-jerk reaction to the information that you're given?
Mm-hmm.
And I was really, one, proud of myself.
So indulgent of you. 7 full minutes.
I'm still a work in progress, okay?
Yeah, I love it.
But it was really cool. And I actually, in that moment, I was like, wow, I'm sitting down to process this information instead of accepting it as it is. And I want to know how this information affects me. Mm-hmm. And where I am right now. And it was really nice because I think that a lot of people, especially in this 2 second attention span world, we don't allow that to happen. And people are just like so quick to jump on anybody else's opinion bandwagon that we forget to sit back and think about our own opinion.
Mm-hmm. Very well put. The more you successful that you become and the more that you live like a big out loud life, I think the more haters are like bound to come, right? It's just simple statistics. So what do you personally do with negativity on social media, YouTube, et cetera?
Honestly, I ban and delete. If I were to pay attention to any of the negative, keyboard fighters out there, then I would not, if I'm not going to listen to the person in front of me who supposedly cares about me telling me that they don't believe that I can do what I think that I can do, then why the heck am I going to listen to somebody that, one, never has met me, two, thinks they only have seen a snapshot of my life, few pictures, through pictures in social media? Why am I going to give them my precious time? And when I say precious, I think that time is the most valuable thing that you can give somebody. So I am not going to reward them with a response or an acknowledgement. I have on a few occasions made an example of, hey, this is a comment that I received. Let me tell you why it's not true because of whatever reason. And I had a larger picture to paint, right? Mm-hmm. And I wasn't just like knocking that person down, hating them back. But really making an example of like online bullying and why it's bad and how we don't really know what's going on in people's lives through social media. So I really just say, I give them a little special finger and don't even acknowledge it. I ban and delete. Sometimes my followers will attack for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't advocate for that. But I just have grown to, one, have thick skin, and two, not give a what about what they have to say because they don't know me.
Right. Early on, I say early on, like a couple years ago, when Brooks Instagram was much smaller and she started getting haters, Brooke Ants. She would text me and the rest of the Brute team whenever someone would pick on her, and then we would go in there and clean up.
Yeah.
Just getting the whole team around it.
Yeah. And it just makes me sad that even has to happen.
Yeah.
You know, I can't even imagine writing on somebody's page or wall or whatever, or to somebody that I have never met and don't know what they're going through or what their life is or what led them to that moment, and have a negative comment. I just can't wrap my head around it. You know, I have no idea. And it breaks my heart that it's so rampant, and it seems to be getting worse.
Yeah, I agree. Especially with anonymous sites.
But also, you know,
there's no bounds.
Yeah. But with all of the, you know, with every one hater or person that has a negative comment, there are thousands of people that are loving and supportive. And right. So I say thank you to every one of those people.
Right. So it comes down to really what we're tracking. Are we tracking the things that we're doing well, the people that love us, or are we tracking how many people hate us and bring us down?
You know, I like to track how many people I have positively affected, and love that's it. Where I put my attention. And occasionally when somebody has, like, I read it. So if sometimes somebody will have something negative to say, and as long as it's not like just derogatory negative, but they have like a negative criticism, I will respond to them in a way that's like, hey, this is actually what it was. And usually they're like, oh, great, so sorry. As long as it's not like, yo, I hate you, you're awful. I'm like, whoa, you're having a bad day and you're taking it out on me, bud. So sometimes I inquire depending on the context of the comment, because sometimes people just need a little acknowledgement and to let them know that they're seen as well. Because a lot of it is spark to be seen.
Right, totally. I think you told me you're 35 the other day.
No, I'm 35 for like another 2 months.
Nice. 35. So you're 35 and your success, your career is like accelerating at a faster rate than ever. What is one thing, knowing what you know now, that you wish you knew when you were 25?
That I was capable. That I was fully capable to do anything and everything that I decided that I wanted to do and to go ahead and do it.
How did you feel when you were 25?
At 25, I had discovered that I wanted something more for my life, but I had not yet been able to have that complete transformation. I still struggled with my self-worth at 25. So when I think about 25, it wasn't as traumatic or chaotic for me as 21, 22 in my teens. But, and I was well into my journey. I wish I had kind of grasped that a little bit sooner and ran with it a little bit harder.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm grateful for that experience because I get to share that and other people hear it and they act sooner on their own lives, which is really
right. Awesome. Very cool. Last question. I know you got to get out of here. Who is one of your biggest role models or someone that you really look up to right now, and why?
Oh man. Man, I have a whole list of people that I really admire, and it's going to be like, nobody knows these people. So one, you know, she works for me, Jenny, she works with me. Jenny has been such a solid support for me for the last 2 years, and I'm just so grateful for her. And, you know, she just always brings the positive. She is not scared to tell me or push back. If she tells me no, I'm like, well, that's just not true. We're still going to do it. Mm-hmm. The benefits of being the actual boss.
Mm-hmm.
But she'll challenge me. And I love that because, you know, as a very strong personality, I need somebody to push back on me. And she's just had my back from day one. And that type of partnership and commitment is hard to find and hard to keep. And I'm just really grateful for her. So she's doing some really amazing things with her life and with my company. And I'm really, really have a lot of gratitude for her. I mean, obviously I always look up to my mama, but there's, man, I wish I could come back to this tomorrow because
hey, that's perfect.
I'll tell you why.
Go for Jenny. So cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So you have since our first podcast, you have a new book out. What is it? Tell us quickly a little bit about it.
So that is called The Badass Life. And basically it's 30 habits to be able to change your bad habits. So what we put our attention to is what grows. So if we're constantly putting our attention to restriction, then we are constantly feeling restricted. So I want people to nourish and flourish their bodies, not just through food, but also their mind and their soul. And this book has 30 practices to be able to kind of tap into that, and challenges, meaning like go out and get a different experience, go sit at a coffee shop. And when you see a person, every person that you see, write down something positive. You know, we need to start training our mind the same way we train our bodies and prepare our meals. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure why we have skipped over this for so long, because our mind is like the engine, right? And our body is the everything else that comes together. But if we have the perfect diet and we have the perfect workout and our mind isn't in a positive place, we will not have those positive effects as much as we could without having our mind there. You will always be kind of tormented in a way. So you have to train the brain as much as you train the body. And I couldn't
agree more
about it. And so it's a collection of challenges and personal stories of how I got over that hump, how I got past that 25,
right,
into my wonderful 30s, and being able to see that positive outlook. Because I'll be honest with you, every day is not sunshine for me. I actually was crying earlier today in front of Jen and Jenny. You know, I have real challenges, emotional challenges, just like every other person. But that doesn't mean that I am broken. That doesn't mean that I am defective. That just means that I'm a human being and I can figure out how to embrace this feeling, process it, and then let it go so it doesn't stick to me or haunt me like an emotional cancer. Mm-hmm. And carry that baggage with me every single day. So I want people to have that knowledge that I have found through my journey.
Hell yeah. I think as humans, we're just a collection of like automated behaviors or habits, if you will. So figuring out like a process to get rid of bad ones and adopt new, more effective ones is, I mean, that's how you become more successful and more, effective and happier in general. You upgrade your habits, upgrade your life.
Ooh, I like that.
You can steal that. Cool. Anything else you want people to know about?
Oh man, you know, I'm just so grateful to be back on the show with you. I loved seeing you guys the other weekend. Can't wait to visit again. And I just want everybody to, you know, go sit down right after this. You guys are already listening, so you're already into something. And just take a few minutes and sit with yourself, breathe through your nose, just think about all the amazing things in your life, because we get caught up so much in the day-to-day, just little baby fires that are constantly coming out left and right, that we forget to look at the beautiful small things that make this life worth living.
Hell yeah. Thank you so much, Christmas. I appreciate your time.
Mike, anytime. Just let me know.
Awesome. Talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.